Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hi, my name is Alan McDougall, and I'm the host of this show with Stepping Out Radio in conjunction with United Steelworkers Union. I'm excited to hear the stories of those who have come here to share their experience, strength, and hope with us on how we overcame some of the issues. I'd like to welcome Archie, who has taken the time away from his family and from his work life and his personal life to spend some time here today to share a message of hope, strength. I'd like to introduce Archie. So, Archie, welcome.
Thank you, Al. Thank you, Al. It's good to be here today.
It's good to be here. Yeah, it's good to really be here, right?
Yes, yes. Clear eyes and everything.
Clear eyes and everything. Yeah. I'd like to just introduce you or have you introduce yourself about your childhood and a little bit of where you came from, what you did, your school, your...
Sure.
Whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
No problem, Al. First of all, my name is Archie, and I am a recovering alcoholic and an addict. And I can say that today where I couldn't very well say that years ago. I was born in the Bronx, and I was raised in Jersey, and I'm the oldest of three. My family, though, we seem to constantly be moving, and... By the time I was 9 years old, my parents had separated, and I, being the oldest of three, I had to take on a lot of responsibilities with my brother and sister. And during the course of that year, we also happened to live through a fire, and we were brought back to New York for a short while before coming back to Jersey. It's funny that one of the things I can think about, though, is flashback from childhood, is my first real taste of beer came through my knee. I was 5 years old, and I fell on the neck of a beer bottle. So I guess it was destined for me to be a drinker, you know? as I said, my parents had split up, and we lived through a fire. And I became very independent. I had already been independent on getting around the city by buses since I was six, because I joined like the Y and the Cub Scouts and stuff like that.
Sure.
And what had happened was with that and growing up like that, I had to take on responsibilities from a brother and sister, but there was a certain independence because when we came back to Jersey, I couldn't go to the same school that they did. So I was traveling every day, and I was getting kind of adventures and seeing different things of life, and I was becoming like an only child within a family of three, which later changed when I was about 13 when I found out my father used to get around, and I was no longer the oldest of three. I was actually a middle child of nine. Pop got around. I think he was looking for a baseball team. He had his nine. So anyway, what had happened was I had gone to grammar school, different people. And I can remember graduation night, we went party hopping. And here I was 12 years old, 12, 13 years old. We went party hopping. And I came home stewed that night. You know, my family didn't wait up for me because I come in 2:30 in the morning with friends. And my mother handed them taxi fare and told them to go home. And that was like the start. I had the taste. I went into high school. And when I went into high school, I went to a prep school. And the older guys looked after me because I was the only swimmer on the team that was a freshman. So while they were looking after me, they gave me a persona, so to speak. It was... He's the kid. Archie, the kid. He had the kid. And that kind of lived in the back of my mind for a long time. And I remember after the first year of swimming, I was with rich people. These people had money, and yet I was always, you know, I was able to party with them. So by the time I was 16 years old, I was partying. I have to admit, I was with the Scouts and the Y, which you would think is good stuff. But, you know, I got high at the Y and I drank with the Scouts. You know, it was the bottom line. And I was 16, and back time then the drinking age was 18. So I was getting passed in liquor stores. And we did anything we could because we didn't have much. So we did anything to scrounge up money to do, you know, to drink. And that's what all the events seemed to fester around was drinking. And I ended up in my senior year, I got asked to leave school over chemistry, which I'll tie that into later. But I got asked to leave, and I went to another school, which was a lot laxer in things that I could do. I had a lot more freedom all of a sudden. And I remember my graduation night from that night. I went out, and I ended up drinking, and I ended up in the basement of one of my classmates' boyfriends. I didn't even know the guy. I couldn't tell you his name then or now. And, you know, I woke up in a, you know, sleeping of beer cans. So at that point, you know, I said I had to do something. I decided to go to college. And the first thing I found at college was there was a pub. And I knew when the pub opened. And if the pub did not open up in time, I would complain to the dean that the pub was not open in time. I'm paying for this. So I was in my third semester. And I went to a class a little stewed, and the teacher called me out on it, and he was just busting my chops. But I said, I'll fix you, and I quit college right then and there. And I was working in fast food, and I stayed with them full time. I had a big career flipping burgers. And over there, again, I had that persona that, you know, I was arch. Now I was just arch with these people, and I would work in the place, and when they needed a somebody on the night shift, they'd say, hey, we're in a jam. They'd call me up. I'd say, listen, I already started drinking. They say, that's okay. Just keep it in a walk-in and don't let the customers see it. You know, it wasn't really the right thing, but I did it. I got bored with that job, and I went into trucking. I was what they call a clerk messenger. And it seemed like a fun job. Everybody was older than me. Again, the kid persona again. They all got 25 years on me. And I would go to the World Trade Center and do a lot of business. And if you know, the World Trade Center used to sway from the wind, but I think it was because of the parties in the hall. I would have to say that had something to do with it. And I ended up, I had an ulcer. And after I got out of hospital, a few months later, I got this wonderful idea. And that was to join the United States Marine Corps. And I went down to Paris Island, and I probably have the shortest service. I got an honorable discharge after 16 days. And I thought that was, well, it happened. It happened. I went back to the trucking, and I was working there. And at 21, I finally moved out of my home because I had a buddy that said, hey, listen, you need a place. You needed some help. I said, yeah, I'll go with you. And he didn't drink much, but I was a good teacher for him. Sure. So we drank, I partied, and it just never stopped. At this point, I'd already been, from the time of 18, I was literally drinking every day. And I enjoyed it, and, you know, I enjoyed my beer, and I did mass quantities. Although when I quit Budweiser, stock didn't go down, but I know I definitely brought the stock up for a long time. And during this course that I was out at 21, I inadvertently, my wife tried to hook me up with her, back with my ex-girlfriend, and I ended up marrying my wife instead. And at 22, I was married.
Okay.
And it was a good thing for a while. I was very patriotic. Every time you open my refrigerator, you saw red, white, and blue. Cases of beer, a little bit of food, some milk, you know. And my wife, the first year we were married, we only married a couple months, and I remember, I can tell you the story afterwards, but I was drinking a lot on election day, and she came home to find me in the bathroom. I had fallen and hit my head on the bathtub, and I was passed out. And this was one of, like, I used to fall down a lot, so I had about, this was about concussion number 5,
wow,
you know, from drinking. And, you know, that didn't stop me at all. I continued to drink, and at this time, I lost a job at the trucking outfit because there was a cutback. And I got a job in what they called the Port Authority. And it was a good job. You just had to hang in there. It was temporary. So you start temporary and you eventually become permanent. And 6 weeks into it, I got this concussion. And that Monday when I went to work, my head was throbbing. And I told them what they could do with this job. And they literally begged me to come back, and I wouldn't. I said, no, I'll collect unemployment. I'll be fine. And then the next part of my adventure was that a couple months later, my mother-in-law got me a chance to work in a chemical plant where I did close to 34 years. And I went to this chemical plant, and I found there were three types of people there. There were alcoholics, wannabe alcoholics, and people who didn't drink. And I was advised, don't hang out with people that don't drink. You can't trust them. So you know who I hung out with. Right. And I, at that point, learned how to drink around the clock. Mm-hmm. And we could drink in the job as long as you didn't get caught. And on your breaks, you had a bar on both sides within a block, within, you know, literally a minute from the, you know. And it was, as long as you could walk in, do your job, and hopefully crawl out and then come back the next day, it was acceptable.
Sure.
So that's what I did. And I did that, and within 2 years, my wife had given me a birth to a beautiful son. Didn't stop my drinking. And I decided to change course for a while, and I took a bid, and I became a drunken forklift operator. So if you were thinking of the Forklift Murderers B-movie, that would have been the perfect title for what I was doing. I was driving up down the road, and there was things that you could do when you would, you know, to make your drinking a little easier. I found that if I would grab a six-pack and put it next to the nitrogen over in the, by the garbage, no one knew it was there, but it stayed ice cold all day. And that's what we did. It was a drinking party. Sure. And I did that for about 3 years, and I wanted to get back into production. And I went back into production, and I got to drink around the clock again. And what really happened was it was getting worse, and I was working there about 8 years, and I did not see the destruction I was causing. I was drinking alone in the basement. I put more beer, sliding it through the windows so my wife wouldn't catch me. Mm-hmm. I didn't care. I remember getting a brand new car, and I had to be back at work in 8 hours, and I carried a few cases of beer in the car, from the car, and when I went to go to work, I couldn't find my car keys, and that's because it was sitting in front of the house running the whole time. And I had to come back in the house and say to my wife, oh, by the way, I need gas money to top it off, you know? And it just seemed like it wouldn't stop at that point. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you what had happened was it was June 10th, 1990, and I had just put a pool up. I had a year-old station wagon, a wife of 10 years, a son 6 years old that I had raised teaching him instead of teaching him nursery rhymes, I was teaching him beer jingles, and I had an Irish setter. And I had this big party for opening the pool. And I decided to fight with my family. And I called my wife a name that I would not repeat to anyone, much less your own wife. And why she didn't, clock me right there, I don't know. And the next morning when I woke up, my wife said to me, did you have a good time? Because you're out of the house by Friday.
Wow.
And the only thing I knew to do, you know, was to beg. And that was not going to work. And I could see the sadness in her eyes and my son. And I knew I had to do something, and I called my job, and the best I could do was, at that time I wasn't in the steel workers, we were oil, chemical, and atomic workers. And what had happened was I was given a telephone number for an EAP. So I did the right thing. I called my brother and said, you're going to have to drive me out there. And I drank a six-pack before I went to see my EAP because I needed my vitamins. And I will tell you what happened as I was in her office, and she recommended for me to go to some 12-step programs, and I told her I needed high octane. And she says, well, you should try this first. And I got up, and I moved the curtain aside, and I said, you see that station wagon out there? I said, look at it now, because tomorrow it'll be on the front page of a newspaper. I'm going to drive it in a wall. I'm going to lose my wife, my son, my dog, my job, everything. My life is over. Mm-hmm. So she asked me to sit out in the next room for 10 minutes, and it was the longest 10 minutes of my life. And she said, tomorrow morning they're going to pick you up. And I said, good. She said, get your affairs in order. And I translated that into going to the go-go bar, getting loaded, and drinking until I couldn't take it anymore. And the end of my last drink, I remember, was down my basement, and there were only six of us left. Two hot water heaters, two furnaces, the Irish setter, and me. And as I went to walk out of my basement, I had my last bottle of Guinness Stout in my hand, ice cold, ready to go down the throat. And I dropped it. I got on my hands and knees to clean it up. And I, even though I knew I was only three doors down from the bar, I knew I didn't have enough strength to do it. And I looked at that floor, and I almost licked the floor. Mm-hmm. That was my last look at a drink for a long time. Since then, I haven't had anything to drink, alcoholically.
Well, good for you. That's a powerful story. I just want to back up to one thing you said way back in your just caught my attention. You talked about your chemistry teacher, one of your professors called you out, and you said, "I'm going to show you," and you quit. It reminds me of the definition of a resentment, which a lot of people in substance abuse live by. "I'll show you," "I'll hurt me."
Yeah, and you know, the ironic thing about that, when I tell people that story, is that I got asked to leave in high school over chemistry, and I ended up becoming a master chief chemical operator, running chemical reactors. You know, the man upstairs says, "Hey, listen, you know, I like to joke around too." So what happened at that point is I was taken away, and ironically, which cracks me up to this day, is I was picked up in a station wagon that was identical to my own.
Oh, really?
And they drove me up to rehab. And what had happened was I talked about my job, my dog, and everything else for about 2 weeks, and the inmates turned against me. And they said, "Look, if you don't get here about yourself,
yes,
that you're not going to get anywhere, and that you might as well leave." And I started bringing the focus, because I did not understand what they meant when they said, "You got to bring the focus about yourself. Think about yourself. Think about yourself. It's not an ego thing. It's a thing for you to correct your life, to get better." So I came out of there, and my job was no help, because I had a plant manager that loved to crack the whip and constantly throw that up to me. And I was determined. I'm very thick-headed. I'm Irish-German, so, you know, we got that double wall thickness in our head, that I got to do something. And I proceeded to be a better husband, a better father, and get involved in things. And it was perfect timing for my son, because he was going through a attention deficit. And I knew a lot about special education, and I was able to help him along that line. And what had changed for me was I started becoming a human being now. It wasn't all about me. It was about me doing for others. I had done that stuff when I was early in my life. With the why, I was always taught about service and giving back and stuff like that. So now I got involved in my fellowship, and I gave back. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I was getting elected to be a union rep. And I started doing things with the union. And then my son, he had graduated to his scouting, and I started doing scouting with him. And, you know, it's funny, because all these years later, one of the things that my forte is cooking for the scouts. And I've cooked for hundreds of people for weeks at a time. And this is a guy that used to have to cook a greasy hamburger on Sunday morning so he could drink all day. It certainly was a change in my life. And all these years later, and I don't say, I want to remind anyone that's listening, you know, I may have a lot of time now, but I'm always closer to my next drink than I am away from my last. And it is one day at a time. You know, it still flares up the attitude. And that's really what happens, is our attitude has to change. Because the drinking was our aspirin, our instantaneous gratification. And that's not available anymore, that instantaneous gratification. What is available now is to be involved and do things and realize it's okay. And it's okay to have failures. You know, during my years of sobriety, I've been hospitalized a bunch of times for different things. There were two points that I really thought I was going to die. I had high fevers in the hospital, and they couldn't do anything for me. And I said, "God, if it's my time, otherwise, you know, well, I'm still here. You know, I'm 60 years old, and I'm still here." And I got to do close to 34 years in that chemical plant, and I was retired because of knee surgeries. But I'm still productive, because the union has for years have asked me to do things. I still do that scout thing, although my son is no longer involved because he aged out. And I've been receiving a few honors of late. I just received a very high honor with scouting, which I couldn't believe would happen to me. I still have the same wife of 38 years. I hear a lot of whistling from her, though, because I think it goes in one ear and it goes out the other, what I tell her. But that's okay. I mean, because it's supposed to be okay, you know. You're supposed to get along with life. I mean, I can be a good uncle. I can be a good person. I can help people for no reason other than it has to be done. And I think that's what's really important, is that when you go through life and you're looking for something, I believe the journey never ends. Mm-hmm. The journey is a constant thing. It has to proceed. You have to say, okay, what do I do next? You know, I hear stories of people, famous people, that got it together late in life. Grandma Moses didn't start painting until she was 80 years old, you know. And then I hear little things that people think are humorous, but I relate to them. The great philosopher, Rodney Dangerfield, said, yeah, watch out for number one or you'll step in number two. And, you know, I can look at that stuff and I can laugh and say, I see something beyond, you know. And I got to tell you, I don't wake up to perfect days, and I don't want to, you know. I like to be creative about my day and see things. And, you know, if I could go back in time, I think of all the hours and days and plans that I did for drinking. Mm-hmm. It's such a waste. I have a bar three doors down from me, and I see these people going in and out, and I just walk, you know, I walk by.
Sure.
And it's funny now, you can't smoke in the bar, so they got to smoke outside. And it's funny because I'll be outside working on something, and I'll hear their conversations. And as the day goes by, they keep coming in and out, and all of a sudden I start hearing like, and I go, that could be me. That could be me, and it doesn't have to be me today, you know. What has to be is, you know, one of the things that I really want to stress, too, is...
Please do.
...is the USW. About 10 years ago in my own local, I talked with the president and said, listen, I want to help people. And so when people would have a problem relating to alcohol or drugs, he would send them to me, and I would, you know, tell them, hey, listen, here's where meetings are, here's some meeting lists, whatever you need. Do you need some literature? And we've been trying this this program in-house. And when Alan contacted me recently and said, hey, listen, the USW wants to do more, that I think is wonderful. A lot of companies give you the stigma that, you know, you're a drunken bum once, you're a drunken bum forever, and they're just waiting for you to slip again. You know, I've seen people with long-time sobriety slip, and then the first thing people say, oh, see, we knew that was going to happen.
That's right.
That was going to happen. And I hate to see that. And seeing that the USW now, the United Steelworkers, has a growing concern, and Al and I have talked over the years about things like this, to see a growing concern to help others and say, hey, listen, come to us. We're your brothers and sisters. Right. That, you know, USW stands for United Steelworkers, but it also stands for Unity and Strength for Workers. And so we have a fellowship going on, that a brotherhood, a sisterhood, and it needs to be blended together. And when we have a weakness, we need to hold up our weak brothers and sisters until they get strong. And then they can do the same, and it keeps passing it on. So I'm hoping, if anything, that from my story, that you got a couple of chuckles, you heard some real reality. Believe me, there were a lot of nightmares. I could stay on the radio for 24 hours straight and give you a lot of stories. But it's not about stories. It's about what you can do and what can be done. And I think at this point, we really need to unite as people. And when someone offers us a hand, in this case, offering a hand from the steelworkers to fellow steelworkers, it doesn't just help the steelworker. For one, every person that gets sober, there's a family behind them.
Exactly.
There's mothers, there's daughters, there's children, there's nieces, nephews, and parents. And when you change, the whole world can change, and it can all get better. That's about it, really.
That's not all about that. That's a wonderful, that's it. I just want to thank you, Archie, for our friendship over the years. It's a powerful, powerful story you gave. It's a story of hope, of reality. how far down we can get in our lives. I worked 4,000 feet underground, but I was never as deep as I was in my own soul. When you talked about the breaking the last beer and you had to think of maybe even getting down to lick it up, I can totally relate to that. And where you are today is amazing. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you on behalf as a fellow steelworker and as a friend. And if anyone out there listening has a problem, please, please contact us or go to www.steppingoutradio.com. Go to the usw.org website, drop us a line, and there's always someone out there that cares. You're never, never alone. Thank you, Archie.
Thank you.